Locked On NBA. The biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we will stop in Phoenix to speak with Brendan Kleen about the Phoenix side of the Trevor Ariza, Kelly Oubre, Austin Rivers deal. We'll speak to Quinton Mayo of Locked On Wizards about the Washington side of that very same deal. And then lastly, we'll go to speak with Eric G of Locked On Thunder about a team in the Western Conference flying a little bit under the radar with a surprise potential MVP candidate in Paul George. It's all coming up. The biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host of Locked On NBA, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast and the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. Go find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We had a big trade go down, then not go down, then actually end up going down across the weekend. So we covered all of that, plus looked at a Western Conference team who's thriving at the moment in the Oklahoma City Thunder. So let's get to it. Let's now talk to one of the hosts of the Locked On Suns podcast. Brendan Kleen is here to talk about a trade that went down across the weekend. Of course, we had that false start. We won't talk too much about the whole Brooks saga, Brendan, but in the end, the Phoenix Suns and the Washington Wizards consummated a deal, sending Trevor Ariza to Washington in exchange for Austin Rivers and Kelly Oubre. The only thing I will mention about that whole Brooks saga, because we're just never going to get to the bottom of he said, she said, which Brooks was doing which and who was lying and all that sort of stuff, but in terms of the return that the Suns got in exchange for Ariza, do you prefer the second deal, or do you prefer the first proposed deal that the Suns thought they were getting, where Dylan Brooks and Wayne Seldon were in Kelly Oubre's place?
Well, look, I think getting two guys would have been nice, because I think Seldon's a pretty interesting player. Brooks, obviously younger and interesting as well as a scorer. So that would have been good. I think the Suns are in a position where they really just have to throw as many darts out as they can and see what young talent they can get. But that being said, I mean, right now I feel like Kelly Oubre is a much better player on the court and has more promise. So I think I'm actually pleased. I was skeptical that they could get both a starting caliber guard or, you know, a veteran guard and a young piece. And so they were able to do that. And so, you know, I'm happy with really either one. I think they are too.
Now, we know the Phoenix Suns have been, it hasn't been a secret that they've been looking for a point guard all offseason. To me, their point guard sits right there. He wears number one and he's the best player on this team, but that's beside the point. But they've been looking for a point guard. It's one of the reasons apparently why Ryan McDonough was fired, his inability to get a point guard. And they bring Austin Rivers in, who honestly isn't a point guard, but he did play that role for some of the season last year with the Clippers. Do you think that he is going to come in and step into this starting point guard role alongside Booker? Or do you think that they'll leave him as that a backup there with the way that D'Anthony Melton did fit in with Devin Booker in those two first games starting together?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I went back this morning, rewatched the Minnesota game where Booker made his debut, and Melton still started in that one, of course, because Rivers wasn't with the team yet. The call will be, you know, Monday morning, and they'll get everything finalized then. But I think that's really the big question here. The Suns' bench has been pretty bad, too. It's almost as big of a hole, not quite a positional hole, but just getting any sort of production out of that unit when, you know, Jamal Crawford is your leading guy, it's probably not a great sign. So they could definitely use some help there. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how they do it. I imagine it'll be a mixing and matching situation. Crawford has given them a lot some nights. Melton's had some really great defensive games already. They have other ball handlers across the roster as well, like Josh Jackson. So I think that they prefer to have it. I think that's part of the reason that they went after a guy like Rivers, somebody who maybe isn't a perfect, you know, prototypical point guard necessarily, not a guy who's going to dominate the ball, but somebody who can knock down some shots, play a little bit of defense, has some size, so that they can kind of add him and make it into more rotation, mix and match to the point where they can, you know, take advantage of matchups and really make it easier for Devin Booker. I think that's the goal here, because he has struggled so much with injury already, talked a lot about the load he's had to take on this year. And I think Rivers is somebody, while not a perfect fit, he's going to relieve some of the pressure on Booker and do a lot of the things that Booker can't.
In terms of Oubre coming across, we already know that the Suns invested the number 4 pick in Josh Jackson last year. They made a trade with the Philadelphia 76ers to get McCall Bridges, who's been starting for the last month or so. And it was, I guess, in that game earlier last week when Ariza sat out on a back-to-back that we had Josh Jackson moving in and starting next to Bridges, that they would be the two that they try and build around on the wing. So where's Oubre fitting in here? He's a little bit older than both of those guys, obviously more experienced in the NBA. I'm not sure he's really any better of a prospect. I'd probably have Bridges as the best prospect of that group personally, but I'm not really sure where Oubre is fitting in there. Who's the guy who's going to lose out? Because from that first game where Booker came back, it looks like they're going to be pushing Josh Jackson down the pecking order. He really couldn't get on the court all that much in that game, and that's before Oubre even arrived. So it looks like they are maybe a little bit more out on Jackson at this point with Oubre arriving, but it's still, of course, up in the air. But how do you see that wing dynamic fitting in between those three young guys they've got there?
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page as you as far as somebody has to lose out just from a minutes perspective. And it really does look like it's going to be Jackson. He's been really one of the worst offensive players in the league this year, kind of any way you slice it. Turns the ball over a ton, can't finish at the rim, can't shoot threes. You know, he's really a defensive guy at this point, an inconsistent one at that, and a passer. And that's just not a player that can see minutes against very many teams in the NBA right now. So I think he, just from a, you know, fit standpoint, really, even though they just drafted him a year ago, is the guy who makes the least sense here. And not only have the Suns acquired Oubre now, but they made a trade for Mikal Bridges, like you said, at the draft, a guy that plays the same position as Jackson, and also made a trade for D'Anthony Melton, who, you know, he's a guard, but does a lot of the same things I think you would hope Jackson would do eventually. And he's been more effective already this year, even in limited time. So I think between those three guys, you know, we'll wait to see what Oubre does, you know, how he fits. There were some off-court problems that you just wonder about how much each guy in that Washington locker room was contributing to all the different things that they had to go through the past few years. Not going to pin that on Oubre, but this is a situation that was volatile, and the Suns situation could be described pretty similarly over the years. So that mix will be interesting. I think that might play a part, of course, too, but on the court for right now, it definitely looks like Jackson's going to be losing time. And the truth is, he's had every opportunity to earn it. So the fact that the Suns have invested elsewhere isn't necessarily a surprise, because he just hasn't cut it for really two seasons now.
Oubre's a guy who I think that is a little bit overvalued, a little bit overrated by people across the NBA. And I think that, look, he isn't a good shooter. He's never really had a good shooting season, never had an above average true shooting season. He's shooting 31% from three again this season. He was at a career high last year, but that was 34. He's never once had a positive box score plus minus. He's never had a positive on-off rating through his 3 years in the NBA. And the on-off thing, I think, is, and while it's an imperfect stat, but the fact that his on-off number has gotten worse every year of his career is a little bit concerning. From negative 0.8 as a rookie to negative 2.2 to negative 6.3 and then at negative 8.9. You know, teams are consistently getting worse with him on the court. Defensively, he has his moments. He never, ever passes the ball. Like you talk about Kokoschkov's offense, Brendan, with ball movement. Now, how's Oubre going to fit in there, a guy who just doesn't pass at all?
Yeah, it's going to be an adjustment, and I think Rivers might have to go through some of the same learning curve. I think Washington plays a very drastically different style, and Oubre is a guy that's been there for his whole career. Of course, Rivers just came this season, so I'm less worried about him. Of course, a veteran too. So Oubre is going to have to adjust, I think. And, you know, I don't know how much of an investment the Suns are looking at this as, this trade of getting a long look at Oubre before he goes into restricted free agency. I think he's obviously an interesting player just from his fit, just in what a lot of modern teams try to do, what the Suns team is trying to do, of course, like we talked about with the four or five different wings they have now. But one of the main concerns I have too with really switching out Oubre for Ariza, just from a rotation standpoint and lineup standpoint, is he's not a guy who's going to play the four. Ariza, for all intents and purposes, on the Suns team this year has been their starting three, but really their backup power forward as well, with TJ Warren starting at that spot and Ryan Anderson being unable to handle really any minutes at all. Ariza has that size to slide in and play the four behind Warren. He's been playing high 30s minutes all year doing both of those things. So obviously Oubre not a guy who's going to defend power forwards, of course, really more of a 2-3. So that's one of the things I'm looking at, is kind of who steps up to do that if they ask Oubre to be a real full-time small forward trying to defend bigger players, how that goes. But this wasn't a perfect swap, even from just a role standpoint. So there's going to be a lot in flux with this trade after, you know, the Suns have already cycled through numerous players at this point, cutting their starting point guard, like I mentioned, Anderson going to the bench. So it was a trade that was supposed to stabilize things, getting a point guard on the rotation that could really help. And I think there's going to be some dominoes that fall elsewhere that might take a while to adjust to as well.
It's going to be very interesting to see exactly how Phoenix runs things. We'll see that over the next week or so. Brendan, of course, you will have all of that for us over on Locked On Suns. Thanks for joining us here on Locked On NBA.
Thanks, Josh.
If you guys are on Twitter and on Instagram, make sure you are following the Locked On Podcast Network. The same handle on both those sites, Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. All of the hosts of the Locked On Network, all the individual team shows, are pushed into one feed. So you get all the breaking news, injury reports, stories, rotations, coaches' quotes, all in one feed. And then on Instagram, the biggest stories of the day pushed into the Instagram story. So 60 seconds of the biggest news of the day, plus other stories through our regular Instagram feed. The handle is Locked On NBA Net. Go and subscribe or follow it on Twitter and on Instagram. Now I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Wizards podcast. It is Quinton Mayo. We're here to discuss the Washington side of the trade that went down across the weekend, where the Wizards get back Trevor Ariza, a player who was the starting small forward there for a number of years, about four or five seasons ago. And in exchange, they sent Austin Rivers and Kelly Oubre Jr. both off to the Phoenix Suns. Quinton, the Wizards obviously have underperformed to begin this season. There's been talk of trades, you know, all through the season, from John Wall to Beal to Porter. Oubre's name wasn't really mentioned all that often. In terms of this deal and getting Ariza back, do you think, or you and Wizards fandom, do you think it's a win? It's a positive deal for Washington?
I think it's extremely short term. I mean, you're looking at Kelly Oubre. He's a 23-year-old wing. You drafted him in the lottery 2015. You actually gave up two draft picks to get him, and you just give him away with Austin Rivers for a 33-year-old that was here. An excellent job while he was here, no doubt about it. But after just the direction of this organization needs to head, you got a lot of rebuilding. You want to keep especially your trade assets in-house. Like, if you're not going to give him the money, at least get something out of him, at least get a pick back from him. So fans are stunned. Media is stunned. I'm stunned. I just did not see any reasoning for the trade that they did with the Phoenix Suns. It's inexplainable.
Was there any, indication that Oubre was one of those guys who was perhaps contributing to some of the locker room issues we've seen with this team over the past couple of seasons? Because obviously his name was brought up in that failed trade, that three-way deal, including the Grizzlies, where he was going to go to Memphis, and then he was still a part of this package. So it appears that the Washington Wizards were pretty keen to get Oubre out of there, whether that was, you know, because it wasn't like it was the same team acquiring him. It was Memphis getting him the first time, Phoenix this time. Was there anything to do with perhaps him being not an irritant, but having something to do with some of the concerns that have been in that locker room?
I haven't heard anything of that nature, and especially the circus show that's been the Wizards this season. You got Dwight Howard, and, you know, not only his injury, but, you know, the thing, and quote-unquote, on social media. You have Austin Rivers announcing John Wall's baby on a podcast before the season started, when I don't think when you get Wall and Beal cursing out front office, cursing out Scott Brooks. Out of all those things, one name that hasn't really been in the spotlight has been Kelly Oubre. He's always professional. The times I've been at the locker room, the times we've viewed him on the interviews and the post game, he's always positive. He stays behind and takes extra shots, tries to get better. He has not been a guy that's been a drama seeking guy that we've seen. So to see that not only they were just trying to send him anywhere, they wanted to send him to Memphis, they wanted to send him, and then they sent him to Phoenix. I thought, out of anything, it was kind of a testament to both the fact that they don't want Austin Rivers. I think that's more of the thing that you can lean to. But maybe they didn't think they could pay him this offseason because he is a restricted free agent. But if anything, I would like the Wizards to, you know, try to move Otto Porter's contract before anything else. Try to move Yan Mahimi's $16 million deal a year, $16 million a year. You try to move those contracts. You don't ship out your lottery pick just for nothing. You don't even get picks back for it. I don't understand it.
Now, you obviously have, I think you've got a higher opinion on what Oubre than what I do, a guy who, to me, is interesting as a wing player, which are always valuable in the NBA, but a guy who struggled with his shot, career high last season from 34% back down to 31% this year. And as I detailed earlier in this show when I was talking to the Phoenix Suns, guys, is that his on-off numbers have decreased every season in the NBA, and this year he's a negative 8.9, which is not a great number. He struggles moving the ball. He's still a young player. What could you, in terms of Oubre, what his absence on this team, what hole does it leave?
I think we have a system in Scott Brooks that it's not really a fundamental X and O system, especially on offense. He's just a guy that preaches effort. And what you're trying to get out of this team is effort. You brought in Sam Decker, who's a high intensity, high effort guy. One of the only guys that consistently gives his all, whether he can knock his shot down every night on a night in, night out basis, is Kelly Oubre. He's on defense trying to do his thing, do the most he can. But when you bring in Trevor Ariza to kind of, I guess, replace that and bring a veteran experience, he's a 3-and-D guy. But when you're looking at defensive rating, they both have a 112, 113 defensive rating. Oubre has the higher net rating. Ariza has the higher turnover ratio. I mean, shooting percentage, true shooting favors KO. Effective field goal percentage, KO. Offensive rating, if it supports KO. So I just don't understand the move. I'm not saying I'm extremely high on him, because a lot of people are saying, well, they couldn't pay him and he doesn't give you that much, but you're looking for effort, especially off the bench, and that's what KO gave you. And he's not going to get this max offer sheet in the offseason. This is not going to be another Otto Porter deal where somebody's going to offer him 100 mil and you're going to have to match it. No, he'll probably be due for like 40, maybe 50 mil this offseason, maybe, because I'm looking at, he had a similar first 4 years to maybe like a Kyle Anderson, but not as good as a Yusuf Nurkic, who, what, he got about 48 mil on 4 years. So Kyle Anderson got 4 years and 37 million. So in the middle range of that, in terms of production, I think he'd get like a 40 mil. If you try to move Jan or Otto Porter and then try to invest in your future with a young guy who just at least gives you intensity every single night, instead of bringing in a 1 year rental that in Ariza, who wants to go play with LeBron in LA, I just don't understand why you're shipping out that asset and not even getting a draft pick back. That's another big thing that I didn't like about it.
The other interesting thing here, I think, with Washington, I talked about this when I discussed this trade on Locked On Fantasy Basketball, is the Wizards' backcourt now, they have nobody. There's John Wall and Brad Beal, we know, two All-Stars. There's Tomas Satoransky. And then who's the next guard on this team? Like, is it going to be Troy Brown that's called into regular minutes? There is no actual fourth, and Brown's probably more of a small forward anyway. Who is the fourth guard on this team?
It's confusing because, like you said, Troy Brown, I'm in the midst of talking to you and watching this game with my other eye against the Lakers tonight, but Troy Brown just got some first quarter minutes. So they brought him in as a forward that he grew up as a point guard. He played point guard his entire life until he got to Oregon. So they're going to, I guess, lean on his IQ as a point guard, even though he has the size of a forward, to kind of fill in behind Wall and Beal at the 1 and 2 position. But like you said, yeah, it's obviously a glaring hole. And Austin Rivers wasn't good, to say the least. I mean, he struggled finding his lane as a Wizard, but he was a body. He was somebody that could play the 1 and 2. Sometimes he was decent. He was serviceable. Other times he struggled. But now you're left with Tomas and, I guess, Troy Brown Jr. He's not going to go back down to the go-go anymore. Like, something else has to happen to steady up that backup 1-2 position. And right now, I don't know if they really understand or have a sense of direction in the front office.
Because it's not like John Wall and Brad Beal have been necessarily the most robust players in terms of avoiding injury. Beal's been good the last 2 years. Wall has been the opposite of that. But if one of those guys goes down, then it feels like the Wizards are in a significant amount of trouble in that backcourt, because they don't have the players there to be able to, to fill in that gap. So this is a team who, at the time of recording, they're 11-18 taking on the Lakers in today's game. It just reeks of desperation, and I guess we'll see Quinton how it goes out. But obviously, the vibe here in Washington is not positive with this team at the moment.
Not at all. And like you said, John Wall's been struggling with a bone spur in his foot. He missed a game or two last week. It's just little things like that. Otto Porter, he's still out for the third game in a row with a knee injury. So injuries, and then you got Dwight Howard, who hasn't seen more than, I guess, 7 games this season. So injuries are creeping their way through the locker room. Wall is trying to play through injury, but especially in a rotation like Scott Brooks, he's not giving a lot of guys minutes. So night in and night out, Beal is getting 40-plus. Wall is getting 40-plus. He's depending so heavily on the starters that they have no choice but to eventually wear down. And when you don't have somebody that can come in and take some pressure off of them and has been doing it, like an Austin Rivers, then you're relying a lot on Troy Brown Jr., which is not something you want to do on a first-year guy out of Oregon.
It has been disappointing stuff here for Washington. They're trying to mix things up to make moves, but in the end, that it may end up making things worse. We don't know, but of course, Quinton, you'll have all that info for us over on Locked On Wizards. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA and discussing the Washington side of this trade that went down.
Absolutely. It was an honor.
Is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? You could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male. We are higher educated and higher earning than your traditional media audiences. So get involved in podcast advertising by having your company sponsor this podcast. Email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Now let's bring in the host of the Locked On Thunder podcast, Eric G. We're here to talk about a team that I think is flying a little bit under the radar in terms of just national attention. They currently sit at the third seed in the Western Conference, a couple of games behind the Golden State Warriors at this point. People, you know, obviously have got the memories from last season in their head with the Carmelo Anthony situation and the flame out in the playoffs. But the Thunder, Eric, they're looking pretty strong at the moment. What's been the major difference, without really, you know, focusing too much on Melo, but is there anything else that's really changed this season that's pushed the Thunder to this level that we thought they could get to last season?
Defensive intensity is the big thing. And really, I mean, what I see from the Thunder this year as compared to last year is a team that for the exception of maybe the last five games or so, for about 48 minutes, will play tough defense, will dive for the floors on, will dive for the ball that rolls on the floor, will be extremely active in the paint on both ends of the floor. You've seen the development of Jeremy Grant, and you're just seeing a much more cohesive unit out of the Thunder this year than what you saw last year.
I had this discussion, I think I mentioned it on my podcast, maybe at the end of last week. Is Paul George the best player on this team now?
No.
Okay.
Let me phrase it by saying right now, yes, Paul George is the best player on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And next to Steven Adams, he's the most consistent player for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the Thunder have really relied on him for about the last, I think you go look the last eight or so games, and especially here in the last six, the reason you've seen the Thunder be able to stay in some games where they haven't been as consistent on the defensive end of the floor, or they've only played well in spots, is because of Paul George. And right now the dude is just on fire. He's hitting from 3-point. He's hitting from beyond the arc. His defense has been just incredible. He's back to that level that we remember him at when he played with the Pacers, a guy that should make first team all defensive team in the NBA this year. And the biggest thing that Paul George has done is given Russell Westbrook somebody he can trust, and given Russell Westbrook an opportunity to take some of the pressure off himself and allow him to rely on his teammates to be able to help them carry the Thunder when he's having bad nights.
On Westbrook now, obviously he missed chunks of this season, the knee injury to begin the season, then that ankle injury. He is still averaging a triple-double this season, 21, 10.5, and 10 with almost 2.5 steals, but there's still some issues there. Now, he had that real anomalous season as a three-point shooter when he won the MVP, but he's back down to under 25% this season. But Eric, why can't he shoot free throws anymore? And secondly, why is he taking the technical free throws when he's a 62% shooter from the line?
If you look at the Thunder overall shooting free throws as a team, aside from a couple of guys, and one of those being Paul George, they're not very good at the charity stripe. And there's a few games this year you can go back to, especially one that really sticks out is the game with the Kings, second game of the year, where if you just hit your free throws, you end up winning that game. Or actually, I think it was the third game of the year when the Thunder started 0-3. But for the most part throughout his career, Russell Westbrook has been a guy that can hit free throws. I think it's somewhat of an anomaly that he's not able to hit now, but that's a funk that I expect him to break out of. I do want to touch on the three-pointers. I you know, the three-pointers going back down, I didn't surprise me at all. And he had that one game against Denver where he, for some reason, decided to go nuts in the fourth quarter and shoot an extraordinary amount of threes and ended up costing the team his game. And afterwards, did like an hour and a half shooting session before he talked to the media. But the good thing is after that game, Russ has backed off of how many times he'll shoot from beyond the arc. And as to why he can't shoot free throws anymore, I don't think I answered that. I don't really know. I mean, there's really nothing different about his mechanics when I watch. I think it's just a matter with any free throw shooter is if you hit a cold streak like Russell Westbrook has, or you're not as good as you once were, all of a sudden it starts to get in your head. And Russell Westbrook is a guy. I don't think there's any doubt that can overthink things and do more damage than good by overthinking them.
You mentioned Jeremy Grant a little bit earlier. He moved into the starting lineup with the departure of Carmelo Anthony. What's he been doing differently, apart from the extra minutes, but is he just providing that defensive hustle? And how's he looking as a shooter? Are teams sagging off him? Because it doesn't appear to be really impacting the offense massively when he's out there. So is he providing more of that offensive threat than we've seen from him in the past?
Oh, yeah. This guy is worlds better from where he was last year. He's having a major impact on this team. First of all, I mean, you mentioned defensively. He's developing into an extremely good rim protector right now, where you will see him get at least a block a game. And I know that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but he's extremely active in the paint and around the rim and makes it very difficult for guys to just have an open look when they're going to drive. He's also been able to score in the paint, which if you look at something, that's something not only between Jeremy Grant and Steven Adams, the Thunder becoming pretty deadly inside the paint. But the big thing we all had questions about coming into this year is whether or not the guy could shoot threes. Could he develop into a three-point shooter? And that part of his game is starting to come around. I mean, he is really becoming a great – I don't want to overuse the word great there, but he is becoming a really good all-around player for the Oklahoma City Thunder, a guy that, in my opinion, could easily play three spots, four spots on the floor. I don't think the only thing he couldn't – I think the only thing he really probably couldn't play is point guard, but he's developing into that type of guy that's almost completely positionless, and that's what you're seeing out of him. And intensity, man, he's got it, and just an incredible amount of athletic ability that it feels like the Thunder have finally harnessed and figured out how to use and got him in positions where he feels extremely comfortable when he's out on the floor, no matter what he's asked to do.
So this team is a little bit under the radar, but hopefully we've turned that radar on somewhat here and people are paying attention to just what Paul George is doing and this Thunder team as they push to try and solidify home court advantage.
Nobody in Oklahoma City wants you to put them on the radar.
Yeah, well, hey, the attention is going to come at some point. The Thunder have been fantastic. Eric will have all that info for you over on Locked On Thunder. Eric, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA.
Hey, thank you very much, Josh. And yeah, the whole radar thing, sorry about interrupting you, but we're very comfortable with them not being on the radar right now. And I honestly think it made some Oklahoma City Thunder fans feel uncomfortable to see Paul George on the front page of ESPN.com being heralded as an MVP candidate. They just kind of want to sneak through the season and get everybody in the playoffs.
Well, sorry for ruining that for Thunder fans.
I think they'll forgive you as long as the winning keeps coming, as long as the winning keeps going on.
Exactly. Check out Eric over on Locked On Thunder 5 days a week. That'll do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you are subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Go leave us a 5-star review. That would be fantastic as well. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the network at Locked On NBA Net. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.